Welcome to the Speak Up Talk Radio Network. I am your hostess, Pat Rulo. We bring you hand-selected hosts, podcasts, and talk radio programming with listening options, 24/7 streaming, or listen on demand. We also feature one-on-one segments with important guests, people who have something to say that you need to hear. Visit speakuptalkradio.com. Today, I have a guest with an extremely serious topic, one that affects far more people than most of us realize. She is author Linda Nassim. Linda has been a writer all of her life, but it is only in the past few years that she has started seriously putting words to paper. She was raised as an army brat, packing up and moving every couple years, and the habit of not staying put has followed her into adulthood, with Sweden and Nigeria being among the places she has called home. Last year, she published her first novel, the title, Nothing, a story of meth addiction and its effect on the addict's loved ones. Her second novel, Eden, set in 1968 in San Francisco's Haight-Ashbury district, will be out next year. And she is available to speak about addiction prevention to students in addiction studies programs. And she's here today to talk about her books that address this prevalent problem in society today. So let's hear it from her. Welcome to the show, Linda.
Hi, thank you very much. I'm really happy to be talking to you.
And I'm extremely happy to be talking to you as well. Now, the topic of meth addiction is a difficult subject, and I'm guessing one that one wouldn't choose to write about without having had some experience. So share with us, if you would like to, why did you choose to write about addiction?
Well, I managed to marry an addict, and how that happened is a totally different conversation. But I never thought I needed to know anything about meth. I sort of know it inside and out now, you can say, and I just thought the reason I went through all of that, because it was pretty horrific, was so that I could tell other people about it and alert them to the dangers of drugs and addiction. We've become pretty nonchalant towards drugs in this country. And I think that's something that we really need to not be nonchalant about. It's quite deadly.
Yes, it is. And I think if there's any lesson to be learned, and we just got started here, if there's any lesson to be learned, is that when horrible and traumatic things happen to you, we still do have a choice as to how we react and proceed from that. And so you chose to take that experience instead of internalizing, I guess, to get it out on paper. I'm sure it was a cathartic event, but that at the same time, it's really helping other people. So when you decided to write about it, was it more for you or was it to help others?
I think it was a combination of both, but I really needed to heal, and the way I work through things with paper and pen, and I mean, that's always been the way I've done it. I make lists of everything. I just like to put words on paper, and I just felt I had some viewpoints that needed to be brought out. We are attacking the problem of drugs mainly from the viewpoint of somebody who already is an addict. And in the process, I think we are creating more addicts because we're not taking care of the needs of people before they get to that point. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of studies that have been done on... I don't want to blame it all on the family. I think part of it is we live in a society where we actually push drugs on people. You just have to watch TV commercials, and there are drugs for everything. You know, lose weight, gain weight, have sex, go to sleep, have anxiety, everything, there's a drug for it. And with that kind of attitude, it really isn't strange that more and more people are turning to illegal drugs because it's part of the picture.
Mm-hmm. And Linda, you hit the nail on the head. All you have to do is watch TV, as you said, and they're even creating problems that people don't have or didn't think that they had and then coming up with solutions for them. And the United States and New Zealand are the only two countries in the world that are allowed to advertise like that to television consumers. And you probably know better than anyone because you were an RN as well. And so that whole healthcare system actually promotes it too. Talk a little bit about that part of your life as being an RN, because I'm sure that had a big impetus on the writing of this book.
Yes, I worked I worked in many different places. I've worked in the third world. My specialty the last few years as a nurse was HIV/AIDS. Mm-hmm. So I've worked on AIDS units. I've worked in the San Francisco County Jail for several years. And so I've worked with a lot of people with addiction problems. And I've heard a lot of their stories, and some of them are in the book. So it's not just all my story. Mm-hmm. Some of them have their stories there, too.
Well, with that in mind, then, why don't you give us a synopsis of the book?
Well, basically, this rather clueless, well-educated, religious woman falls in love with a guy she meets in church, and turns out he sort of believes in God, but not acting on it, okay? We can have belief, but he didn't have faith, put it that way. And after they've been married a while, he starts acting really strangely, and then she starts acting really strangely, too, and ends up in the emergency room one night because of really high blood pressure, and finds out that he is a meth addict and has been giving her meth, and she doesn't know what to do about it. Praying didn't take care of the problem. You know, she can't figure out why God is doing this to her. And she tries to get him to stop. She tries to reason with him. He denies everything. That's one of the things about addicts, is that they lie. And I read one book recently that said the hallmark of recovery from addiction is honesty.
Ooh.
So basically, an addict will lie about everything. And this guy will tell you black is white and day is night, and he'll get you to believe it. So they're really good at lying. Eventually she leaves him. The violence gets to be too much. Meth addicts tend to be really violent, as do crack users. I used to tell my ex that if he had to use a drug, couldn't have been heroin, because then he would just sit in the corner and be calm.
Right, be quiet.
So eventually she leaves him because of the violence, but she is afraid. She doesn't want to talk to any men. She doesn't want to have anything to do with them. And this guy walks into her life who has the patience to deal with her. And it turns out he is a drug counselor, but many years before he had been an addict, too. So he knows everything she's going through. And in the meantime, her ex-husband decides he wants her back, goes into a program, but he doesn't... He keeps thinking, you know, other people have it easier than me. Other people have more than I have, and I should have those things, too. I don't know why I don't have them. And he gets out of his program, and he's clean, but he isn't cured, if you know what I mean.
Yes.
Because it's an attitude.
Mm-hmm.
Attitude. Addicts tend to see the world, or see, the glass half empty or half full. They see it as half empty. And they always think that other people are getting breaks that they're not getting. So it goes on. I'm not going to tell you the end of the story.
I know. No spoilers. So then why did you title it Nothing?
Because that's how he sees himself, the addict, mm-hmm. in the story. That is how he sees himself. He believes, really, that he is worthless, although he makes great pretenses. One of the fantasies he has when he's high is that, he's working for the FBI and he's going to bust people and things like that. But he sees himself as really being incapable of succeeding at anything. He's surprised when people like him because he doesn't like himself.
Wow. Such a sad commentary.
It is. It is. And, I think the way we raise our children has a lot to do with that. The studies have shown that, for example, children of alcoholics often become alcoholics and addicts.
Yes.
And some people might say it's genetic. There may be a genetic tendency. There, I know definitely with alcoholism, it can be genetic. But also just the abuse and the neglect that they suffer from the alcoholic parent can so lower their self-esteem and their image of themselves that that's where they turn for comfort.
Mm-hmm.
So,
Yeah, because that's all they know. I mean, one would think that as a child, if you see something in your parent that you don't like, maybe your initial thought would be, okay, I'm never going to be that way, or I'm not going to do that. But if they have no other recourse, and like you say, they kind of seek solace in what they know.
That's true, you know, and it's like people who are children of alcoholics tend to marry alcoholics. Mm-hmm. And there's one theory that says you marry the person who is most like the parent you had the most trouble with because you're trying to fix the relationship. But there's that other theory about being comfortable with that. Mm-hmm. No matter how much you didn't like it, you're used to it, mm-hmm. and that's kind of what you expect. So, yeah.
A lot of psychological issues surrounding all of this as well.
There is. Mm-hmm. There's mm-hmm. a lot. And I think I would like to use the word spiritual also. Okay. Mm-hmm. We are noble beings, and our spirit is a powerful force that gives us the ability to love and be loved. It's our creativity, our imagination, all kinds of things. And a lot of people don't like to use that word, but I think that's a very a part of a human being that has to be developed. And by using drugs and pills to deal with your problems and things like that, you don't develop that side of you. Mm-hmm. By having a constant focus on earning money so you can buy more things to make yourself happy, you don't actually make yourself happy. You just make yourself want more things, and you become more unhappy.
As you were speaking, I was thinking of the fact that you were an RN. I've interviewed many, many doctors for my radio program, and I interviewed a Dr. Peter Grinspoon lately, a Harvard physician who wrote a book called Free Refills. And this whole book was about the prevalence of addiction among healthcare providers as well,
yes.
Simply due to access.
I think you deal with, it isn't just the access, it's that you deal with just really tremendously horrible things sometimes,
mm-hmm.
horrible things. The same thing is true of police and firefighters. They see things that the average person can't even imagine. And if they don't have really good coping skills, that's where they go, you know?
Yep. Right. So addiction is not just your down and out guy out on the street. It knows no socioeconomic boundaries.
No, it doesn't. Mm-hmm. It absolutely doesn't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, your characters, I'm going to imagine that you took some directly from people, or were they a composite of many? Let's talk about your character for a minute.
A couple of them were inspired by real people, but they are composites.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then others were totally made up, but I guess they're not really totally made up. They must be composites
mm-hmm.
I have in my head somewhere.
Right.
So, yeah, they're... I mean, I have a crack addict who lives in a box, a runaway who's a schizophrenic, 15 years old. And, you know, and I have transgender characters, because it's set in San Francisco. I have transgender characters, mm-hmm. and I have some gay people in there, and Latinos, and and African-Americans also. I have characters who are in the same... Actually, all of the characters, there's one main character who's in the same boat as the addict, but the others are all people who try to show him that there's a different way to do things,
mm-hmm.
and sometimes he listens and sometimes he doesn't.
Right. Now, when you were writing the book, did you have a clear direction of where you wanted to go, or during the process did things take off on their own?
I kind of knew the ending when I started it. And then characters came up. For example, I had to have someone who would, I don't like the word save, but save. I think someone who saved the wife. There had to be someone who showed up who could get her to focus on something other than herself. And the same thing for the character of the addict. There was somebody that he turned to for help when he decided he needed it. So those characters kind of grew as the story grew.
Mm-hmm. And your cover design, it's very captivating. You have a nice-looking gal seeing the backside of her holding her hat and clearly leaving her footprints in the wet sand, and there's a sailing ship in the water. Why did you choose that image?
That wasn't the original image. When I first published the book, I published it as a Kindle version only, and I actually used a picture I had taken years ago of the Golden Gate Bridge on a stormy day. Mm-hmm. It was actually during the El Nino back in the 90s, whatever year that was. Mm-hmm. And so there was water splashing and there were clouds. And it was taken with a 35-millimeter film camera. And when I decided to try to reach a bigger audience, I decided to publish it as a paperback. The quality of that picture wasn't good enough.
Okay.
Cover. Mm-hmm. So I went to a company called The Cover Collection, and I got that picture from them. And that scene is actually in the book where she's walking barefoot along the beach mm-hmm. trying to sort things out.
Yep.
So I've actually got the good news that it has been made required reading for the fall semester for the addiction students at Sheridan College in Wyoming. Oh,
excellent. Congratulations.
Yeah,
yes.
I know.
Excellent.
I'm going to be speaking there in September,
and I'm trying
to set up engagements to speak to similar class
mm-hmm.
in other places.
So positive to turn this around like that. So what has been the response from your readers?
Well, my style is a little bit not what you'd expect, I think, from a person who's independently published. I would call it a lyrical, literal style. Some people aren't comfortable with that. Some people don't like the style. Some people really love it. Most people like the content, although for some people it can be really hard. It's a painful, intense book.
Mm-hmm. So why do you think addiction is such a problem today? We touched on the fact that it's prevalent in advertising, but it just seems like it's out of hand.
Well, I think that we have that mindset that we can cure all our problems by taking something. And, I mean, alcohol is a good example. Alcoholism just kills so many people and damages so many people, causes so many accidents. And yet there's constant advertising for alcohol. There's festivals for alcohol. And at the same time, you have, you know, don't drive buzzed. That's the new one. And most people don't know, for example, that one beer is enough to make you a deadly driver. And it's not that you're going to swerve off the road and hit somebody. It's that it slows your reaction time mm-hmm. just enough that if something unexpected happens, you won't be able to avoid it. So our society is, on the one hand, pushing alcohol, and drugs go along with that. And then on the other hand, they're telling us not to drink, and people are listening to the message they want to listen to, you know. So it's a very confusing time.
It still has that cool stigma, alcohol and drugs. A lot of people just think that's cool. I mean, we haven't reached that point where people really understand how harmful and dangerous they are, not only to the person, but to the people that they supposedly love and live with.
Right. Yeah. I mean, a good example of this, I have teenage grandchildren, and they were telling me that we were talking about words and you know, how people use words. And like what we used to call cool back in my days, it became rad. And you know what the word for it is now among teenagers?
No.
It's dope.
Oh, it is dope. Yes, that's really dope. You're right.
Yeah. And I don't think they really realize what they're saying. What they're saying is that it's acceptable. This means something is cool.
Oh, my.
So that's how far we've fallen.
Wow. This is scary.
It's very scary. It is very scary.
It is. I wouldn't want to be raising young people right now.
No, it's a really hard job. I mean, parenting, I think, is the hardest job in the world. And so many parents these days have to have two jobs to make ends meet.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have a lot of time for their kids. And that's also part of the problem. The parents have to find time to be really engaged with their kids. And to really encourage their kids to do what their heart moves them to do. You know, I know a lot of parents who go, well, my son's going to be a doctor, and it's like the kid gets sick when he sees an accident.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, he's not going to be a doctor, but yes, he is. you know what I'm saying?
I do.
I think every child, every person is created with something wonderful inside them that they need to develop, and it helps make the world a better place. And parents have to encourage their children to bring that out and use it to make the world a better place.
Mm-hmm.
I worked for a while in the county jail, and I always thought, you know, if all these people were out there doing something good, it would be such a wonderful world.
Yep.
You know? So, but they just, for whatever reason, they weren't in circumstances where they were allowed to look at themselves that way.
You really hit it when you talked about the family unit, too, because we are in an economic time, as you said, where people just need to work, and there is no time left over for family. People don't eat meals together. They don't sit and play games together, and when they are together, everyone's looking at their phone and not even having a dialogue. So we have gotten so far off track when it comes to communication.
Yes, we have. We really have. And even the phones, you know, cell phones are very useful. They really are. But they're part of this, because there's an attitude. It's like me first.
Yes.
And that's pretty common in America. Me first. I want what I want. I will work for what I want, but it's for me. And I don't care about anybody else. And I think that we are not happy when we're being selfish and self-centered. We are happiest when we are helping other people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just the way human beings are made. I mean, you know, you have your radio show, you're putting all these viewpoints out, you are helping other people. And you don't want to just sit home and be on your cell phone all day.
No, not at all.
Yeah, and I think that children need to be kind of taught that. I mean, you know, I've heard of kids taking 100 selfies a day.
Yes.
It's like, seriously?
Mm-hmm.
You know, who's got time to look at that? Probably all your friends are doing it too, and you're just going to look at your own selfies.
It's true, Linda. Yeah. We are living in a really bizarre moment here.
We certainly are. We really are. And yeah, I just think that this dialogue needs to continue, and more people need to be involved in it, because it isn't just the drugs. It's more than that.
Yep.
That this affects, and it comes down to what our home life is and how we're taking care of our children. And there's a lot of children with problems today. There's a lot of mental illness, a lot of depression, anxiety, ADD.
Yes.
Meth users,
mm-hmm.
a lot of them have ADD because the meth helps them focus.
Yep.
So if the family had been able to notice and maybe help get them treatment, maybe those people wouldn't have ended up using meth.
Mm-hmm.
They would have had other skills to help them. So there's just, it's really hard. We need to be really focused on our children, and the times we're living in almost make that impossible sometimes.
And speaking of children, even children in school, you know, somebody's gets out of hand or gets a little too exuberant, you know, well, then we need to give them some Ritalin. So instead of paying attention to them or maybe stimulating them and having the classroom actually be a place where learning is going on, half of these or even more of kids are drugged these days. So how are they ever going to get out of that cycle if they start that in kindergarten?
Exactly.
Yep.
Yes, that's true.
Mm-hmm.
I think our school system, I personally think education needs to be our top priority.
I agree.
That's where most of our money needs to go.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to have smaller classes. We need to have, like, my daughter-in-law is, she's a para. She works with the special ed kids, and because they need one-on-one help. Well, the school districts can't afford a para for every special ed kid. You know, they need to have more money. They need, yeah. It's just our funding does not allow our schools to really meet the needs of the children.
Lots of issues to tackle here.
Yes.
Yeah. So
it's a really big subject.
It is a huge subject. We can talk about this for a very long time. What advice do you have then for both the person addicted, whether it be to drugs or alcohol or whatever, and what advice do you have for the other person living with an addict? I know that's a huge question. There's a lot.
It is. I mean, I stayed with my ex for a long, long time, and everybody thought I was crazy. But I kept thinking that I needed to help him, that somehow I could make him understand, you know, that he was valuable and this and that. But it's like I couldn't. I really couldn't. And I can't say that definitely a loved one will not help a person. The people I've talked to who have gotten clean and gotten their lives turned around, a lot of them have done it because of relationships, usually with parents or children, but it was, in fact, a relationship that gave them the motivation to turn their lives around. And for the addict, I would say that I wish that each of them could see how wonderful they are inside, because that's what they don't see.
Yes.
And understand that all of the struggles we go through in life, because everybody goes through struggles, I don't care how rich they are or how beautiful they are, they all go through struggles. All of those struggles are just ways for us to learn how to grow and be better and stronger people. They aren't meant to shut you down. So.
I like what you said, that basically there's a beautiful person inside all of us, and whether the person is an addict or not. And that takes me to my next question about what type of rehabilitation do you find that makes sense? Because it seems like there's so many places and methods out there. And you said these three words earlier. You said clean, not cured. And I think in a lot of instances, people are let out of these rehab situations where they might be clean at the moment, but they're not cured. Do you have any suggestions as the type of rehab that makes some sense?
I really like the AA program, the 12-step program. Mm-hmm. There are people who don't, who aren't comfortable with it, and there are a lot of options for those people. But I really think, because that is a peer-run program, so the people that sponsor you are people that have been where you are,
right.
And they, for one, they can see through you. Those of us who aren't addicts, when we're dealing with addicts, we swallow all their lies and we don't help them. So they can see through you, and they've been there. They can give you guidance. I really do like that program.
Right.
And I think one of the things that would be needed in any program would be, and I'm not sure, I think in AA it is based on your own initiative. I'm not sure that an alcoholic or an addict has a lot of initiative at that particular point when they're in the throes of their addiction. But you need a program that will get you engaged with something that is bigger than you. If it's sports, if it's, you know, Civil War enactments, if it's planting trees in the city, if it's conservation projects, if it's, you know, going and working with kids, you have to get out of yourself and get involved with something bigger where you're feeling like you're a useful part of society. Mm-hmm. It's really important.
Wow. You have great pieces of advice. Thank you for sharing that. So what is next for you? I know you're working on your next book, Eden.
Yes.
Yeah?
Yeah, I've been working on that one since the 80s. Kind of life kind of got in the way, and I stopped writing for a while during my marriage. And then when I did start writing, I had to write about the issues that made me stop writing.
Mm-hmm.
So, Eden is set in the 60s in Haight-Ashbury, where I actually was. I'm old,
but You're funny. It,
you know, the Vietnam War and the Civil Rights Movement and all of that stuff are going on, and they're part of the book. So I'm hoping to have that out by the end of next year.
That was a crazy place and a crazy time, wasn't it?
It was.
Whoa.
It was, and I'm not sure that it didn't get us started on the place where we are now. But a lot of good things came out of that, especially the Civil Rights Movement. That was a start, and it's a step in the right direction. We've got a lot farther to go in that area. But
yep, seems like we've taken some steps back. We need to get back in control of ourselves here. Well, now, is there anything that we missed that you'd like to talk about today?
The most important thing to me is the children, so that this doesn't continue in perpetuity. that parents who have alcohol and drug problems can get them under control for the sake of their children, and that we can raise our children to be loving, creative, warm, engaged individuals, so that the idea of using drugs or alcohol to deal with issues just never enters their minds.
You are right. Children are our future.
Yes.
They are. Well, now, where can listeners go to learn more about you, and where can they purchase your book?
It's available on Amazon. Mm-hmm. There are other booksellers who have it, but Amazon is the publishing company that I use.
Okay. And you have a personal website?
I do. www.lindanassim.com. Do I need to spell that?
You can.
LindanaSeem.
Okay, lindanassim.com.
Yes.
Linda, I sincerely thank you for tackling this difficult subject with such honesty and openness, and I really know that your writing and your speaking is helping others. It has so been my pleasure to share you and your message today. Thank you for taking the time to be open with us and to share what you have to say. Thank you.
Well, thank you for having me and giving me the opportunity. I really appreciate that.